From allergies to zinc deficiencies, Hangry to hay fever, we provide easy-to-absorb information to improve your health. It Sounds Like Health on Texas A&M Health Talk. Howdy. Welcome to Sounds Like Health. This is Mary Lee Meyer.
And I'm our co-host, Sam Kraft.
And we are here with Dr. Eric Grayson.
Thank you. Howdy.
Howdy.
So today we're going to talk about the different kind of over-the-counter pain relievers and when we know when to use one type versus the other type and what kind of is best practice for those.
So like acetaminophen, ibuprofen, that kind of stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
What do we have first?
Dr. Grayson, so is there certain types of circumstances that would lead you to pick acetaminophen over ibuprofen or another type of anti-inflammatory?
Human beings physiologically are very distinct. So some patients may get more pain relief or better fever relief, you know, with one versus the other. But in general, we kind of like to separate the over-the-counter products into two big kind of broad categories, one being acetaminophen and the other one being what we term NSAIDs, which would be non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Typically, acetaminophen acts more centrally in the brain, and so it's a pretty good pain reliever. And the NSAIDs act in a completely different way, working on what we call COX enzymes or the moderators of inflammation. And so that makes NSAIDs like ibuprofen, naproxen. There's another one called ketoprofen that people may be less familiar with.
What drug is that last one? I've never heard of that one before. Is it just a regular inflammatory like some of the other ones you mentioned?
The only difference is what dose you use. Aspirin, ibuprofen, and ketoprofen are really the only ones that I'm aware of that are over the counter. And ketoprofen is a very small portion on the shelf, so it wouldn't surprise me that you haven't noticed it.
Okay.
So when it comes to NSAIDs or non-steroidals, we typically think of those as a little better at reducing inflammation. And since inflammation is secondary to injury or something that's going on with the body like rheumatoid arthritis, typically we're going to reach for an NSAID to treat that kind of pain. If we're talking about headache pain or back pain or something that really doesn't involve inflammation, then acetaminophen is actually a pretty good choice. So trying to tease out what type of pain you're treating can kind of put you in the right direction as far as what to select.
I'm really bad about choosing the right kind of drug when my head hurts or my ankle's sore. I know if my ankle's sore or any joint pain, I'm going to take an ibuprofen because it takes the swelling out. That's what everybody always tells me. And it's anti-inflammatory. But are there any other benefits to an anti-inflammatory than just that?
Not really. Decreasing the inflammatory process may shorten an injury, the time frame that you experience the pain with the injury, but not by as much as you might think, because the anti-inflammatory action only lasts for a few hours. And so typically there's a lot of similarities between acetaminophen and NSAIDs.
So would I be okay taking an ibuprofen and then also some acetaminophen on top of that do they work together to get rid of my pain and the swelling?
Generally what we recommend is one or the other. In situations where, a patient's just really not getting the relief that they need, on occasion with a doctor's recommendation, we can recommend staggering doses. In other words, the acetaminophen, you can give that every 6 hours. You can generally give the ibuprofen every, depending on the dose, 6 to 8 hours, and just put the doses in between each other so that they're spaced out evenly. If you're still not getting relief from that within a few doses, you really need to probably see the physician about what's going on with causing the pain.
And so for our listeners that may or may not know, acetaminophen is most commonly use the word Tylenol for acetaminophen.
Yes, that's a common brand name. There's a number of brand names, but that's probably the one that's most recognizable.
And then the word ibuprofen is common brand of Advil.
Or Motrin too.
And Motrin.
Yeah, Motrin. That's right. There's several brand names of ibuprofen, but Motrin or Advil is probably going to be the most commonly recognizable.
Mm-hmm. So which one would you use for some sort of chronic pain?
You know, chronic pain is a little bit different story. When it comes to chronic pain, I avoid recommending over-the-counter products. And the reason for that is chronic pain really needs to be thought of and treated differently from an acute pain like a headache or a sprained ankle or, even a muscle injury. Because it's, you know, those events are acute and they last for the life of the injury. And then once the injury has healed, then there's no more need for pain. Chronic pain, you're talking about something that is a physiological state that is ongoing for long periods of time. That's a completely different pain process. And I think clinicians kind of like to approach how we address chronic pain a little bit more holistically, because there are long-term effects that come from the use of pain medications.
You know, a lot of us out there, you know, we go out, we like to go to, say we're at a sporting event and or like tailgate or something. And, you know, we might go out and have a few beers and you know, torque up our ankle a little bit or hurt my shoulder throwing a football. Can you take any of these drugs with alcohol? I know it's probably not advised, but the average everyday person, they're probably, well, my shoulder hurts. I got to take something right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But what's your thought?
Well, on if tailgate gatherings or anything like they used to be, I would say probably don't mix them, because the general rule of thumb is if you have more than two or three drinks, or if you have more than two or three drinks daily, then you really need to stay away from these drugs. And to explain why, acetaminophen is cleared by the liver. And alcohol tends to have quite an effect on the liver. And you take the two together and you have the potential for liver damage, especially if it's done on a routine basis. For the non-steroidals, it's a completely different reason. Non-steroidals tend to be very rough on the stomach and cause damage to the stomach lining. Alcohol is really, really good at doing the same thing. You combine the two together, and you can really get some significant GI irritation and possibly damage as well. So alcohol basically ups the severity of the side effects from these medications.
And you mentioned the liver. Do any of these affect the kidney? Because I've always heard ibuprofen has the chance of hurting your kidneys as well. Is that just an urban myth, or is that true as well?
Oh, no, that's very true. In fact, we pay close attention to what we call over-the-counter medication use whenever we bring a patient into the hospital, because it helps us identify those patients that may have an occult or a hidden problem with their kidneys. Non-steroidals like ibuprofen and naproxen over time with repeated dosing can cause problems with the kidney. There's no doubt about that.
And you said the non-steroidals typically are hard on the stomach. Does that mean you have to eat before you use them?
Generally, the upset stomach part, the stomach irritation and maybe the discomfort that you feel with the medication sometimes can be alleviated by taking it with food. But I'd still like to point out that doesn't prevent the stomach damage in the lining of the intestines or the stomach. So doses can still cause problems.
And is there any other kind of drugs or medication that you should not take with these kinds of pain relievers?
Wow. We would be here for the rest of the podcast if I were to list them for you. There are a number of medications. Probably the most expeditious way for me to handle that is to say, really, you know, if you're on medications or if you frequent herbal medications and that sort of thing, probably the best approach is to just walk up to your pharmacist, you know, at you know, whichever pharmacy you go to or wherever you're buying the pain reliever, and just have a conversation with your pharmacist there. He's got the tools or she's got the tools to look that up specifically and give you a real detailed answer as to what happens when you combine those medications.
Okay. Okay. And are there certain kind of conditions that people may have where they should not take one or the other of these?
Absolutely. If you have any measure of liver damage, I think you need to be cautious about using acetaminophen. Acetaminophen and non-steroidals as well. You know, you really need to be cautious. But acetaminophen, you know, we generally look at somebody that's got cirrhosis or hepatitis. When it comes to acetaminophen, we like to limit the dose to 2 grams, where normally you or I might be able to tolerate up to 4 grams a day for short periods of time. Someone with hepatitis or liver damage, we want to cut that maximum in half.
So I have a question. Since we're talking about doses, growing up playing football and I always had like a sore knee or an elbow or something, I took like 800 milligrams of ibuprofen and that was not a big deal for me. What's your thought on weight versus dosage?
Well, I would say that you were younger and much healthier then. And
so, that is true.
and so your ability to tolerate higher doses is there. I hesitate very much giving any advice about doses beyond the over-the-counter directions, and I'll tell you
why. Well, I guess that's what I'm asking. Yeah, because you know, the bottle says take 3 a day and call me in the morning or whatever it is, and that's a pretty generic prescription, so to speak.
Sure. So when it comes to over-the-counter products, I'd like to point out that, you know, they are we think of it in two terms, and that's the same terms that the FDA looks at it, which is number one, safe. In other words, can a patient take this and as labeled or as directed on the packaging, and it be considered for the most part safe for most patients in the population? And the second thing is efficacy. You know, does it work? Can the drug company that manufactures it demonstrate that it has a positive effect for what it claims it's treating? And so with those two things in mind, there is, as labeled on the container, that dose and that frequency and the maximums and then the cautions that go along with that, all of that taken into consideration. If you do it, if you take the medication that way, it's generally considered to be safe for the patient. Okay. When you start exceeding that with larger doses, you tend to increase side effects and possible long-term consequences. And so there's certain monitoring requirements that go along with that, or time constraints that go along with those higher doses. And so consequently, those higher doses are reserved for prescription processing. Okay. And the reason for that is the physician has prescribed it, and in theory, is monitoring your progress both with the condition that's being treated and any side effects that you might be experiencing.
Sure. Well, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. I never thought about it.
So if you're a bigger guy, you don't get a pass on the dose. No.
Well, that's good to know. I mean, even now, I still tend to do that. When I need to take them like that, I take them like that because that's what I've always done. And I've always just heard that because I'm a bigger guy, you need more medicine. And it's nice to hear that that's not always the case.
Not always. I think, you know, the exposure to the medication circulating in the blood is still affecting the kidneys and the stomach lining, you know, just like the smaller doses do. And so, you know, there are consequences to the higher dose. And time constraints on how long you can dose it that way and how often you can give the dose have to be expertly determined. There's a general belief that if it's over the counter, it's safe. And so, you know, I can take whatever I want and it's still going to be safe. And that is a myth.
So that's really a great point. Can you kind of elaborate on how they may or may not be as safe as we all think?
Sure. I'll give you an instance. Acetaminophen itself is really quite quite well tolerated and has very, very, very low toxicity until you start exceeding the maximum dosages. And then there's a pathway in the liver that breaks up the acetaminophen so that the body can clear it out. If you take too much acetaminophen, either in dosing single doses or in total doses in the day, that liver process that breaks up that acetaminophen so that the body can get rid of it gets saturated. And so the acetaminophen stays in the system much, much longer and goes through an alternate pathway to get broken up and taken out of the body. And that pathway can cause serious harm because of the metabolite of the acetaminophen. And so it's very safe. It's very effective. But if the dose is received, it can become deadly.
How do fevers and headaches play into all of this? I feel like those are two pretty common ailments that we reach for these kinds of medicines for.
Well, yeah, the first thing that I have a fever, and the first thing I'm always told is like, oh, take some acetaminophen, and it'll knock it out of the way. It'll drain it out. I guess is that a normal common practice for that drug specifically?
Well, it is effective as what we call an antipyretic. It's very effective for that, but so is the nonsteroidals as well.
So ibuprofen will actually help with fever as well?
Yes, it will. In fact, it's very common in pediatrics to prescribe the ibuprofen, for fever as well. So it's a well-known antipyretic, and it works just as well. I wouldn't say one is better than the other, but if a patient has a preference for one reason or the other for one of the products, they should receive some benefit with either one. However, let me just inject one little point here. When it comes to fever, just because you're a couple of points on the thermometer higher than normal doesn't mean necessarily that you should treat the fever with medication, because the body's response to a viral infection or even a bacterial infection is generally to increase the body temperature. And so what that does is it ramps up the body's ability to fight that infection. White blood cells work better. They tend to circulate better in the body. There's just a whole lot of benefit to a slightly higher body temperature. And so to squash and press down and diminish every single fever is maybe not the best approach. If you can tolerate it for a little while, not treating it might be a good way to go.
Well, that's interesting. I've never heard, I've never heard it put that way. Is there any difference to, say, a younger person taking acetaminophen over ibuprofen? Is there a benefit to one of those two things, specifically when you're talking about fever? Because that could be one or the other.
It can be one or the other. Either medication can, will help with the fever. They're both pretty effective. Pediatrics, we tend to prefer the ibuprofen, but that could just be because it tastes better in a syrup, because acetaminophen is not the best tasting medication. But they're actually both pretty effective as antipyretics. It all depends on the extent of the fever. Now, all of that said, we will all get cranky and irritable and very uncomfortable and not be able to sleep and.
That is definitely what a fever is for me. It's awful.
And so,
especially for children, too.
So when it gets to that point, it's okay to take something for your fever. But until it gets to that point, I would say let your body work on that infection. It may decrease the time course of how long you're sick.
Okay. And do people ever get used to these kinds of pills? If you take two ibuprofen every day for little headaches here and there. Do you ever need to increase?
Yeah, I guess that your body dose? Become immune to the medication at some point to its good effects.
Not really. There's no built-in tolerance to the medication. But my first thing is, when you said take two ibuprofen every single day, my first response is don't do that.
100% good advice. You were talking about do not take two ibuprofen a day, obviously for the health risks that could pose. What about taking an aspirin a day for say, like heart purposes or anything like that? Is that Is that still advice? I know growing up that was always a thing. Is that still a common practice?
Absolutely. And in fact, I would say we need to do that under physician supervision. And the reason I say that is the size of the dose and how often we give it is vastly reduced as far as the benefits from it. And in fact, the literature is changing. I've seen a couple of things come across, you know, on my inbox on aspirin and the dose that's required very recently that would maybe indicate that the dose that we're using every day for everybody that has heart disease or cardiovascular disease or coronary artery disease, that dose may be at some point in the near future, next 3 or 4 years, a little different than what we're currently recommending. So when it comes to that daily aspirin, I would strongly urge people to seek out the advice of their physician.
So what are some of the biggest misconceptions about these kinds of drugs?
Well, one that comes to mind right away would be combining some of the other over-the-counter medications like famotidine or an antacid to decrease the stomach upset that comes along with ibuprofen or some of the other nonsteroidals. I generally don't recommend doing that because that takes away the patient's pain response and it blocks their ability to perceive any damage that's being done by the nonsteroidals to the stomach lining or the intestinal lining. And so those patients that do that on a routine basis, when they present with an ulcer or gastric reflux disease or some of the other intestinal disorders, their problem tends to be more advanced. And so my recommendation is don't do that. It's a common practice. And on an acute basis over a very short course, maybe it's okay. But on a regular ongoing basis, probably not the best plan.
And what we're talking about here is mainly about, you know, taking, say acetaminophen with the antacid of some sorts or some sort of anti, what's the word, like heartburn kind of medicine?
Acid blockers.
Okay. Well, Dr. Grayson, we're about to wrap up here. Is there anything else that you might need the public to know about acetaminophen or ibuprofen in general, you know, some do's, some don'ts, or maybe just a general, hey, look out for this kind of thing?
Well, yeah, let me add in one, you know, be on the lookout for thing.
Sure.
And that would be that a number of medications, both over-the-counter and prescription as well, have acetaminophen as a component of their formulation.
It's just another piece of that one drug. So you might be taking drugs that don't even know that it has acetaminophen.
Correct, correct. But it's generally on the prescription drug label, typically, or it's in the ingredients list if it's an over the counter product. And let me give an example. When it comes to a popular nighttime cold remedy, it has 1,000 milligrams or a full gram of acetaminophen in it.
Wow.
We generally recommend your entire daily dose be limited to 3 to 4 grams of acetaminophen on acute administration. So one dose of the cold remedy will give you, you know, an easy 1/4 of your entire day's dosing regimen. And so some of these products have got quite a bit of acetaminophen in it. So to prevent the toxicity, the liver toxicity that's associated with those medications, you've really got to read the ingredients label and make sure that the total daily dose of acetaminophen is limited to that 3 to 4 grams.
That's really good advice. You know, when I'm sick and I'm taking, you know, some cold and flu medicine at night or whatever, I never think about the other medicine that I've had earlier in the day kind of stacking up on itself.
Absolutely. When we're sick, the goal is I want to feel better. But we really need to be cautious because these medications do have side effects and toxicities.
All right. Well, I think that's all the time we have today, Dr. Grayson. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Sounds Like Health. Join us again in a few weeks when we talk about diabetes.
Thank you for joining us on Texas A&M Health Talk, a production of the Texas A&M University Health Science Center. Visit us on the web at vitalrecord.tamhsc.edu, where you'll find answers to all of your health questions. Until next time, stay healthy.